Welcome to Spiritually Naked, where physical and non-physical worlds collide, offering a refreshing concoction of optimism and realism. It's time to strip down the barriers of limiting beliefs, to master the art of manifestation and synchronized living. Everything you need to live an inspired, awakened life is within your grasp. Start creating the life you desire today with Spiritually Naked as your guide to simplifying complicated issues for real life change. Now here are your hosts, Steve and Stephanie Banks.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here today on Spiritually Naked. I'm your host, Stephen Banks, and I'm here with my partner and co-host, Stephanie Banks, who in the second portion of our program will channel for us a collective consciousness named Solomon. But first, we're excited to introduce to you our guest today. We have with us TJ Woodward, who is an inspirational speaker, awakening coach, and addiction counselor who has helped people through his simple yet profound teachings. He is the host of Awakened Living TV and Awakened Living Radio, and is also the author of a book, Conscious Being. Thank you for being here with us today, TJ. Welcome to the show.
Hi, TJ.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here and really looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. So it's interesting that you're an awakening coach, and so many of us have such a varying degree of ideas of what awakening is, because to each of us it's different. So from your perspective, what is it you're trying to introduce to people? How is it that you're trying to define for them what awakening is?
Well, it's such a great question and one of my favorite conversations to be in. You know, there's a big conversation happening on the planet right now about this great awakening that's happening and about this new paradigm we're moving into. And I really love that you framed the question the way that you did, because in my experience, waking up might mean something slightly different for each of us. And we're all in maybe a different place in our own evolution. Essentially, what I mean by waking up is waking up to the truth of who and what we are. You know, it seems that we come into this world really connected with our essential self, really understanding ourselves through the lens of wholeness and perfection. And then life happens, right? We're born onto this planet and we have different traumatic experiences. We learn about competition and struggle and effort and all of these things that really cause some original early, you know, some early separation from our original nature. And so for me, waking up, what I mean by that is really a great remembering of this essential truth, this spiritual being that we are. You know, we often hear that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And for me, the awakening process is really about integrating those two and recognizing that we absolutely can be in this world as spiritual beings, and it really changes everything in the way we relate to our humanity.
Well, yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I agree completely 100%. And so your book, Conscious Being, is it focusing on that, or is it coming from a slightly different perspective? It sounds fascinating. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I've skimmed through it, and it's on my to read list, which is saying something, because there's quite a bit few books to read out there. So can maybe just tell us a little bit about what your book is about.
Absolutely. So the subtitle of the book is Awakening to Your True Nature. And to me, that's what this process is all about, regardless of where we're at in life, our life circumstances. You know, as you said in the intro, I do work in the field of addiction treatment, and addiction to me is really symptomatic of that separation from that essential self. So whether we're working with an addiction, you know, as we know, quite often we'll have an experience in life. Maybe we call it a challenging experience, if we frame it that way, you know, a loss of someone, the loss of a job, the children leave home, we go through a difficult illness. And that seems to be an opportunity or a doorway for us to really question, who am I? You know, that's the deeper question of us looking at waking up. Who am I? What am I here? Not so much what am I here to do, but who have I come here to be? So my book, Conscious Being, the title came from an Eckhart Tolle quote, which is conscious being leads to conscious doing. And in the first 40 years of my life, I was all about doing. You know, I had really lost connection with that essential self. And so I was out there trying to achieve, trying to reach for something outside of myself to try to feel a sense of love and wholeness and connection. You know, I think that's really what we're all seeking, is that love and connection. In my own life, I came to a place where I recognized that that was only going to happen from the inside out. So my book, Conscious Being, is my own journey and some experiences from some of the clients I've worked with over the years about how we do have this great remembering and come back into, I would say, a connection, but it's really a oneness with our essential self that we could say call God or light or love or source. That's what's really happening in a really big way on the planet right now. And my book, my intention for my book, is to be a practical guide to help people in their own process of rediscovering that essential self.
Absolutely. And it is, like you say, it's so profoundly important. And I do agree that most of us, or at least an aspect of the times, has been, based on our societal structure, is defining ourselves through what we're doing. And that's an old belief that we are coming out of. And I think that it's one of the most important realizations to come to, because once we stop focusing on what to do next, we start focusing on how do I feel, looking within ourselves to start defining, like you say, who we are. The important questions.
But what is, so this is interesting. So TJ, something just popped into my mind. I agree completely, but at the same time, what we do creates who we're being.
It's
so
closely
tied. What's your, like, how would you respond to somebody who said, yeah, but I'm doing all these things and, but I'm being this way that doesn't really seem like it should match what I'm doing. You know what I mean? The practical sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that question, because I think sometimes our mind hears that it's this or that, right? And so in my own journey, I thought I could do my way into right beingness, if you will. Like if I could just prove my, and this was very much on an unconscious level, of course, I was trying to achieve, I was striving and clinging for something outside of myself to try to feel whole and complete. The reason I love that quote, conscious being leads to conscious doing, is that most of us in our culture we kind of have it backwards. We've really been taught that we're supposed to do something important. You know, we say to our young children from such an early age, you know, who are you going to be when you grow up? And what we're really saying is, you know, what role are you going to play? And so absolutely, I think the action in the world is incredibly important. I just did a wonderful TV show recently with Temple Hayes, who's an incredible New Thought minister in Florida. And our topic was engaged spirituality, because we are looking right now at how we can engage in the world. So it's not about only the beingness, but for me, the important distinction is to really have a firm, connection, a clear connection and knowingness of my essential truth. In other words, the beingness comes first. And when I'm really clear on the beingness, then the doingness, if you will, comes as a natural outpicturing of that. So for me, I just had it backwards, really, for the first 40 years of my life. And then I had this great experience where I lost everything I owned, and I had this beautiful spiritual experience where I recognized that this really is about who I'm being in the world. And then the action came from that. Then the doingness came from that. And it was just an incredibly different way to be in the world.
Mm-hmm. I think you just made that distinction perfectly,
yeah,
for most people. And my thought went to something that Solomon says quite frequently to people, is that we are making the choices in our everyday based on the mind. Whereas really the choice needs to be coming from the heart, which is what you're saying, just using different words, coming from the heart. That's our driving force. That's the captain in the control center, so to speak. And then their mind puts into play all the things it needs to do to bring that about. And meanwhile, there's, in every moment, there's this choice happening, the mind coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that, because that really is another thing that I'm seeing so powerfully happen right now as we really more and more of us are moving into this new era. It really is much more about heart-centeredness and beingness-centered, which, to me are slightly different things, but we're recognizing that this isn't about the mind being the ultimate power. I think about the New Thought movement in the late 1800s, where people began for the first time to recognize that the mind is a powerful creative force, if you will, And that was a really revolutionary thing at the time. And now we're evolving into, I think, this next level, which is yes, and the mind is also limited. And this is about tapping into something much deeper and into that heart space and into that feeling tone, if you will. And then from there, we can use the mind as a tool. Albert Einstein said it so perfectly, you know, the mind is a trusted servant, and that an intuition is a sacred gift. And then he went on to say, our society has put so much emphasis on the servant and forgotten the gift. So this is about us first being in touch with that beingness, that intuition, that heart space, and then letting the mind then create from that place. For most of us, we are quite often doing it backwards.
Yeah, we need to redefine the roles of our inner workings, for example, the mind, the heart, intuition, emotions. Once we start to redefine the parameters of these opportunities, these aspects of ourselves that are here as a whole, then things will become far more balanced. And one thing I wanted to say is I really loved the way you acknowledged your what would be considered a downfall in terms of having lost everything as an opportunity to really move forward in your life. And I really congratulate you on that. It's an amazing perception that we all must take on.
Well, and that's, I think, a big step in becoming living an awakened life. Wouldn't you say, TJ, to be able to change your perception so that everything in life is, yes, it may present itself as being challenging in some ways, but to really get to a point where you look at it as an amazing opportunity, and the tougher seeming the problem, the bigger the opportunity that lies within, yeah?
Without a doubt. And there's a couple things I would love to say about that. One is my own experience was that when I got really clear that I was ready to dedicate my life to doing spiritual work, I didn't know exactly what that was going to look like at the time, but I had this continual intuition that I was here to do spiritual work. And at the time, I owned a successful furniture business, and there was no way that my mind could comprehend how I would shift from that into doing spiritual work. What happened, truthfully and transparently, is I said no to that inner voice for at least a year. And then at one point I recognized, oh, I think I need to say yes to this. I think I want to say yes to this. I'm choosing to say yes to it. And at that point, everything in the external realm started to collapse. So I recognized even in the midst of it that it was because I had said yes to a deeper calling and because I had built the structure of my life in such an egoic way. I was all about believing that I was my career, I was my material possessions, and it was a subtle trajectory that had happened all throughout my 30s where I woke up around age 40 and realized that my life was not where I wanted it to be, said yes to this deeper calling, and then everything began to collapse. Here's the key, though. Just because everything in our lives collapsed doesn't mean we're automatically going to wake up. In my experience, in my own life, and in working with other people, what I recognize is that's the opportunity. That's the opportunity to walk through that doorway and recognize it's a way that we can reframe something and not call it bad or challenging, but say, wow, this is an incredible opportunity for me to really create my life in a much deeper way. For me, the way I framed it was, okay, my life just fell apart. I want to rebuild it. I'm going to say yes to the choice to rebuild it from the inside out. I'm going to focus on the beingness. I'm going to make a firm connection with the truth of who and what I am. And then from there, allow the manifestation to happen organically. Very, very different way of approaching it.
Right. Yeah. And to get to the point eventually where when it seems like things are falling apart, we can really say, hey, okay, it's not actually falling apart. It's falling into place.
Nice.
Absolutely.
I like it.
So I really want to touch quickly on what you're doing with people that are dealing with addictions. I know personally, I've never struggled with addictions, but I seem to have a lot of people around me that are in need of care and love, essentially, to help them work through their addictions. So maybe, and I know it seems to be becoming a bigger and bigger problem, at least what I'm noticing. What's your take? Give us a rundown on what you do, what you're seeing in that regard.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm in the process of writing my second book, which is going to be focused on addiction and addiction recovery through the spiritual lens. I'm very blessed to work in the field of addiction treatment, and I recognize that there's a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspect to all of life, and certainly to addiction. I'm blessed to do spiritual care, so I get to look at addiction and addiction recovery through the spiritual lens, and that's really what I'm writing about in my second book. I don't see addiction as the problem. I think addiction is the solution to something. And to me, the deeper issue is spiritual disconnection. So I've come to my perspective on addiction through the spiritual lens is that the three root causes of addiction are toxic shame, unresolved trauma, and spiritual disconnection. And when we work with, when I work with someone that's coming out of an addiction, my work is all about assisting them, creating a safe space for them to reconnect with that essential self. Because to me, I recognize that underneath all of the behavior is the essential wholeness. And when I made a commitment to sit with whoever I'm sitting with and see them as whole and perfect in the midst of any addictive behavior, remarkable changes happened. And quite frankly, we're all, our culture is really addicted. We may not call it addiction, but I think we're addicted to thoughts, we're addicted to opinions, we're addicted to our smartphones. You know, we are a society that has primarily been outer focused. And so that could be called addiction. So those of us who are doing the deeper spiritual work are recognizing that this is not going to be solved from the outside. And that's really my really brief overview of addiction and how we work with that, again, is to create a space to reconnect with that essential self, to have that great remembering.
So if you were speaking, sorry, babe, I know you had a question too, but if we were speaking to somebody like myself, oh, look, this is really happening. Okay. So let's just pretend we're having a conversation here. And I said to you, okay, TJ, I've got this girl and she's really struggling. What would be the best, if she's not willing to go into treatment, to you, what would be a piece of advice for somebody like myself who sees it, feels it, experiences it, lives it, wonders if they're still alive if you don't hear from them for 2 weeks? What's the best thing I can do from a distance?
Thank you. And, you know, traditionally, I think sort of in the recovery world, the standard answer, and I want to be clear, this isn't my answer, but I want to first kind of say what the standard answer kind of has been. The standard answer would be something like, well, you can't really do anything for her. This is up to her. You might need to create a boundary or cut her off or take care of yourself. I'm actually looking at a very different paradigm here, and that is it possible to maintain connection? Is it possible to see her as wholeness and perfection? What we know in the quantum field is that the observer has an effect. So when we begin to see someone through as their wholeness, as their perfection, we can see sometimes remarkable things happen. Then, of course, we do have this human realm that we live in where we might feel frustrated, we might feel sad, we might feel powerless over someone. Maybe there's fear about someone. And so there is also something really valuable in recognizing and acknowledging that she does have her own path, and that you can let her know that you're still here for her, you still love her, that you're connected with her. And then there is a place at which she has to have her own spiritual journey, and we get to allow other people to have that. Quite often, I think the people right around the person suffering from addiction, the issue is control, and it's well-meaning. You know, they're really afraid that their family member or loved one is going to die or going to overdose or going to, you know, live this life that they would rather see different. So it is about this interesting balance of maintaining openness, maintaining an open heart. When we, you know, hold someone in prayer, if you will, we're not praying for them to get sober, but really seeing their wholeness, affirming their wholeness and their perfection, and then also detaching to a certain extent and letting them have their own journey.
Yeah, I agree fully. It's all we can really do is be there for them and let them know that we're there for them while, you know, removing ourselves from any potential dangers that may come with that. But I really like to say it's a really important work, and I'm glad you're working on that, TJ. But in terms of the people that you're working with, coming from the spiritual perspective and the awakened idea, are they resonating with that, or is it something that's taking time to work with before they kind of see that perspective?
if we're talking about working with the people specifically through with an addiction, honestly, it's a wide range. Some people immediately resonate with the idea, because what happens in a lot of like sort of treatment modalities is people say, you know, addiction bad. Now, they may not use those words, but they start to say, something's wrong here. You're an addict. They start to label someone as damaged or broken in some way. And that's a particular modality. You know, there's that whole intervention model where we gather the whole family, we surprise the person, and then we say, we're going to cut off our love for you if you don't change. So I'm coming at it completely differently than that. And that is, I recognize that addiction is not the issue. It's not the problem. It's always been a solution to something. Let's get down to what that something is and how we can reconnect. So I think some people are really loving that right out of the gate. I had a client just last night, actually, in a group I was facilitating. He said, you know, I've been watching and listening sort of to your perspective of addiction. And at first I was like, I'm not sure about this. But now that I've been sober for 3 months, now that I'm starting to do some work on myself, I'm recognizing that all of this really is a deeper spiritual issue. How can I now reconnect with that essential self? So sometimes it takes time for people to recognize. And again, this isn't the only modality that will help, because there is physical, mental, emotional aspects as well. But a holistic approach would look at all four of those. And I'm speaking at it, of course, through that spiritual lens.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what I'm curious about, and I figured that was going to be the answer in terms of people being all over the map, but in terms of people who are, in fact, making the connection and engaging with the inner aspect of our natural self, like our spiritual, through our spiritual eyes, and seeing that that's where our recovery will come from, are you seeing a lot of success versus those that are not necessarily choosing to be aware of that?
Well, I would love to say absolutely yes. And I can actually say that that is true. And then there's also people that for whatever reason have challenges and continued challenges. I've seen people really light up to this kind of framework, and major shifts happen. I mean, I remember I worked with a client for a year, and she continued to drink. Something happened at one moment where she said, oh, now I get it. I've always walked around believing I was damaged. And it took me a year to hear you saying, what if I turn that around to, underneath that sense of feeling damaged or broken, there's still wholeness. And then, you know, what was interesting is she kind of disappeared, and I didn't hear from her for a year. And then I was in a meditation retreat, and I saw her, and she said, I'm now sober a year, and my whole life has changed because of that moment when I realized I'm not broken. That's not the truth of who I am. There's something deeper here. And for her, it was a profound shift. So I have seen people really grab onto and embrace this way of seeing addiction and seeing themselves through the lens of wholeness and perfection, and have really profoundly positive results.
Mm-hmm. And that's such an important thing to note. And I think, you know, sitting in the seat that I've been sitting in terms of being part of the support, sometimes really all you can do is sit in quiet contemplation and send love and send love and send love. And knowing now that sending love really does make an impact physically, spiritually, emotionally, it's being proven. You know, this is the work that Greg Braden's been working on and the likes, and to see scientific evidence now that says sending love around the world, sending love to your next door neighbor, sending love to the person in the grocery store is really making a scientific difference. It's indisputable. I think that's just amazing.
And that might be what makes the breaking point in people's realizations. Because I agree with you that the important thing that every single being in existence can realize is that we're not broken. We're just experiencing, we're interpreting our experiences in the way that we are. And we are all totally and fully empowered to change that at any given moment.
Absolutely. And there's this great story of a tribe, I believe it's in South America, where if someone in the village or in the tribe committed what they would call a crime, they put the person in the middle of the circle, and the people speak all the kindness and the love and all the wonderful things about that person as long as it takes until that person hears it. Now, what a different framework that, than what we have in terms of, you know, whether it's addiction or crime or any other issue where we're seeing the person as damaged. And so I know that the three of us here are very clear that seeing the wholeness, seeing the potential in someone, seeing them as their divine self has a profound impact. And honestly, it's not just on the receiver, it's on the giver as well. We know that, right? The more I see love in other people, the more I experience my own. I remember early in my work in the addiction field, I thought my role, and we're bringing the conversation full circle to the idea of conscious being and conscious doing, I thought my job was to do something with these clients. And at one point I recognized this is about me being in the room with them, having a commitment to doing whatever I need to do to be clear and see them as their wholeness, and something profound happens that happens on the level of consciousness. So it's not so much about what I say or what I do or even what I ask, but it's about a state of beingness that has a profound effect. And I know that both of you, obviously, we know that well because we've seen it demonstrated in our own lives and in the lives of the people we know.
Absolutely. And I love this conversation. I love it. It's amazing and it's powerful and it's so incredibly in need. We need this conversation for sure. But we're out of time for this portion of the program, TJ.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
I was heading there. would you like to let everyone know where they can find you online?
Absolutely. Very simple. TJWoodward.com. You can see everything about my current book, my practice, the spiritual community in San Francisco. It's all there at TJWoodward.com.
Excellent. So stay tuned and we'll be back with TJ and Solomon.
It is our pleasure to be here with you again in your time, in the space of your current reality as a human being, living through your divine self, through your connected self to all of creation. For many of you, this idea of connection, or conversely disconnection, is coming more into your awareness as you begin to feel the effects of either being in alignment or not. So we congratulate you for getting to this space in your linear life that is connected to the non-linear experience of being a being. We congratulate you for getting to this point where you are acknowledging that to a certain degree, you are understanding that something seems to be amiss. We are here to support you on your journey. We come to you through a mutual agreement to co-create this experience. We are here to support you and you are here to support us. This is an agreement made prior to you being here today in whatever capacity that is. So we thank you for your trust in us. We would like to open up the doors to communication at this time if there are any questions that you may have. We will do our best to appease your curiosities, concerns, issues, problems. Share your joys. We're here to listen and to engage at your will.
My question is a question a lot of people are asking now that we have a new president in this country and a new administration. I guess my first question related to that is, what is the deeper spiritual purpose or meaning of this transition that we've gone through politically?
The answer to that is really quite simple, although it seems complex in the minds of many. But boiling down, distilling the current situation boils down into two components that we talk about quite frequently that become an inner battle individually and collectively. The two components being that of fear, that of love, that of soul, that of ego, that of power, that of peace. As the human collective consciousness moves forward in the direction of relinquishing boundaries, you may find an increase in them temporarily as the planet adjusts and aligns to the movement that is taking place within the whole. In other words, the battle is on. Yes? Do you feel this? This is not to say that it needs to be a long, drawn-out, nasty battle, but there will be conflict. As the human spirit decides collectively which direction it would prefer to go. There will be an inner turmoil collectively, just as there is an inner turmoil individually in many. So the idea of a particular person in power not necessarily meeting your own personal requirements in terms of moving towards peace, moving to collective living, moving to a place on the planet where all are cared for, all are loved, all are fed, all are clothed. There comes in the idea, the inner conflicting idea of finding the ability to love all beings regardless of which role they are playing. This becomes an inner issue, and we would suggest taking this as an opportunity to reflect upon which you would prefer to feel, the feeling of fear, the feeling of love. Pick one, stay with it. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that was kind of my next question is, as conscious beings, what is our role, or what are we called to do in the midst of this for our own awakening or continued awakening, and how we impact the planet in a positive way?
First of all, we'd like to make a very small distinction, yet one worth noting. None of you are being called to do anything. Being called to do something implies that there was something, somewhere, someone outside of oneself that is making a request, does it not?
Mm.
It is subtle, yet the subtleties will begin to make the most profound shifts over time. So we understand which direction you're going with your question. As an individual living a collective life, living a collective experience, the choice will always be your own. The choice will always be your own. The idea is to be clear, concise with yourself about who you are being, who you would wish to be, who you would prefer to be, and how you will begin to implement those changes if changes need to happen. As you move through this period, in every moment of every day, there is a choice to be made. How will I respond to this situation? Understanding that how you're responding in the smaller aspects of your life, those smaller decisions that you are making, impact on a grander scale the bigger decisions that are being made. Where are you putting your energy moment to 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 moment, acknowledging the accumulation of that momentum is essentially pushing in a direction that you are choosing by your state of being. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. One question that a lot of people have been asking me, and I would love to hear the perspective, is knowing that we can either choose fear or love, in the midst of that, how do we choose love when we are feeling fear or when there's so much fear around us? That's a question that I get quite often, so I'd love to ask that.
By not forcing it. By not forcing it. Just acknowledging that on some level, somewhere, it probably exists, and allowing yourself to still move through the feelings that you are feeling without getting stuck, without allowing yourself to wallow, without allowing yourself to fall into the depths of self-pity, victimization, feeling as though you have no control over how you are feeling, because you do. Becoming aware of your inner strength to begin to allow your life to be directed by the feelings that you are creating based on your beliefs of the experience at hand. In other words, allowing the mind to open, allowing the heart to open, so that you are in a position to see multiple perspectives. if one chooses to continue to move through life as if there was only one way to do everything, there is no room to see other points of view. And we can hear many of you saying and thinking right now, well, there are bad people doing bad things. Yes, there may be, but they too have chosen a role. And at some point in your past experiences, many of you have had past life experiences, have been in that role. But that does not mean that underneath all the layers is your essential core, which is love. So nothing else matters at that level. Nothing else exists at that level. So in the heat of the moment, when you're feeling frustrated, angry, controlled, manipulated, remind yourself that at this moment, I am experiencing fully the idea of being a human being, but I know that I am also this eternal being that is nothing but love. And although I can't see it right now, one day I will. The more you force it, the less quickly it's going to come to you. You can try to, all you like, pretend that you've forgiven, that you love, that you've moved on. But from an energetic state, you can't fake this one. You're better off to be how you feel in that moment, believing that you will see it, that you will come to that point over the course of time by reminding yourself of who you are. Does this make sense?
Yeah, and I also appreciate that you're saying honor where we're at in that moment, because for me, that's such a key part of it. Because I tried for so long to kind of pretend that I was feeling only love and sort of pushing down the idea of fear. So I love that it's this recognition that we're having what we call the human experience while also experiencing that deeper truth of who we are, which is love. And they can live in the same moment. So it's not either this or that. So thank you for that.
It's a distinction between judging how you feel and not judging.
Yes.
You're better off to be completely unbiased about how you're feeling and just be in a state of allowing yourself to be, if this makes sense. In other words, by pretending, in other words, telling those around you that you've forgiven, telling yourself that you've forgiven, telling yourself that it's all good now, there's nothing to worry about, and you're not really there, you create a wobble in your vibration that is then translating physically into the body of an easiness, of that feeling that you know what we're talking about, that feeling of being in a state of nervousness, that something is happening, that but you don't quite know what. This is a wobble in your energetic state. By not living from the purity of who you are, by not presenting yourself to yourself and to those around you as the authentic person that you are, in other words, not being honest about who you are to the world for fear of rejection, for fear of criticism, for fear of neglect, when you do this, you are creating a wobble in your energetic field that is quite uncomfortable, more uncomfortable than simply acknowledging to yourself the state you're in, but also looking at life as this opportunity to not have to stay in that state. But you have the choice. You have the ability to create change. You have all that it takes to change your perception, to change the way you look at the world. And as you begin to play and experiment with these ideas, you may or may not see shifts and changes that are manifesting into real life terms that may feel better. In which case, we encourage you to keep playing with this idea, allowing your mind to transform into a, let's say, helper to the heart. A partner to the heart, but the heart is where it sits. The heart is where you make change. The heart is where you transform. The heart is where you make a difference in the lives of others. You can't talk yourself into this. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. One other thing that is coming up for me that I've noticed a lot of people in conversation around, even in, you know, what we would call spiritual circles, there's still a sense of we need to get somewhere or be somewhere, or there's going to be this great awakening that happens at some point. And I'm wondering if we could speak to the role of present moment awareness and what is really wanted, you know, what each of us individually can do in terms of creating more present moment awareness in our lives.
This is a time period where things appear to be moving quite rapidly, yes? Where momentum is quickening, as many of you would say. And with that comes a feeling within many of you, a feeling of urgency, a feeling of we've wasted all this time, we need to make these changes now. We are encouraging all of you to slow down just a little bit to get back on the right track. It's not that you're off the right track, but you could be on a slightly smoother ride by just easing off the gas pedal a little bit, allowing that which has already happened to manifest into reality. Vibration happens in advance to the manifestation of real life, materialized, crystallized idea. Does this make sense to you?
Yes.
So by slowing down collectively just a little bit, we'll in fact begin to speed up the process. The best way to do this is to get back into the present moment and to stop focusing so much on the future. As a human being, you will make plans, you will set goals, you will make lists, you will pre-plan. And we are not saying to stop doing this. We are simply saying make your plan based on the idea that this is just a plan. This plan could change. There may be something better that comes along that will help us more in this situation. There may be someone better that will come along. The date may change for the betterment of this opportunity. Many of you will get very fixated on a particular goal, a particular plan, and when that doesn't happen completely to your satisfaction, there is this downward turn of, I failed. This can quite simply be avoided by understanding that there are opportunities coming your way from a multitude of different directions. So if you're only looking ahead in one direction, you're going to miss the opportunities that are all around you because you're fixated on one point. Does this make sense?
Yes. I'm curious what My it's kind of a question, but it's more just kind of a an opening up to something, and that is, what is the deepest message for anyone that's listening right now?
To look within, to find that deepest part of you within that will open up the door to your creative potentials. The empowerment of which many of you speak, empowerment comes from within. Empowerment comes from deep within the human heart that connects directly to your eternal self. This is where creative potential lies. This is where inspiration lies. This is where imagination comes from. This is where living a conscious life, being a conscious being, as you say, originates. Not the human body. The human body is there as a tool, as a vessel, to allow you to experience life on earth. This is an experience. This is a very real experience, yet the reality of it is it really isn't as real as you think. What's real is what you feel inside on a moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment basis. Being in touch with how you feel will determine the reality that you are creating. Once the human collectiveness understands and integrates this fully, you will begin to see changes on your planet that you can't even imagine right now. And this is part of what is happening. This is part of your process. This is part of what's unfolding right now. A huge component is people beginning to understand their feelings, people beginning to understand their emotions. Up until recently, they were just words thrown around that there really wasn't a full grasp collectively on what these attributes of being a human being mean, how they relate to your reality. So this is a huge step in the evolution of the spiritual human being, yes? Mm-hmm. We would like to thank you for this opportunity to share with you our perspective, to share with you some words that may or may not guide you in a different direction, but we are here to help you understand, help you become more in tune with your higher self, that which is connected. And we come to you through the idea of love. We look forward to our next exchange.
Thank you, Solomon. Well, how do you feel, TJ? How was that for you? Did you gain any new perspectives, or is it just reaffirming the ones you already know?
Well, what I love is that it just feels so congruent with the conversations I've been in, and really what I see also as what's happening right now on the planet. I feel like it's such a great confirmation of that deeper knowing that it really is within each of us, right? That Solomon is speaking to that essential truth that is absolutely within each of us, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. And I think a really important aspect of what they were talking about and has made a big impact in my life is the slowing down. As we were discussing earlier, you know, we exist and the idea of doing is going to create our being. And, you know, you can really do yourself. You can just do and not take any time for yourself. But what has really expanded our lives is having taken the time and really let go of, say, 40% of the doing I was doing. And it's really made a high impact in my life.
Yeah, beautiful.
How about you, Steph?
I'm trying to remember what, usually I have this really clear, vivid memory of what was said, but I'm kind of drawing a blank.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's kind of bizarre, really.
That's a first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Will Solomon was talking about basically, you know, in order to change, it's not so much about changing things, it's about focusing within, and that's what will bring about the change.
Well, weren't they talking to you about trying not to criticize and judge yourself? Was that?
Yeah, I think that was a really profound message for people. As we move into how do we relate and how do we work with not only the externals, right? Because I think a lot of times we can feel like we're being pulled into fear, but that can also happen within ourselves, right? And like to not judge and to be present that I'm having this human experience. In other words, like the message that came through for me and what I was hearing is rather than trying to pretend that I'm coming only from love, we honor and acknowledge that the fear could be there as well and allow that to be there rather than trying to push it away. And it would be much more powerful to authentically have our feelings be in our heart, regardless of what our mind might judge. And if we can move out of judgment, then things begin to shift in a really positive way.
That's right. And that it's actually more, although it may seem like it, it's actually more of a comfortable state to at least be honest with our feelings. From a vibratory level, right? Like, I think they said that we create this wobble in our vibration when we're not being honest with ourselves, to ourselves and to the world around us. Yeah. And it was also, when you asked about, Trump and, you know, how do we best deal with that? And, you know, I think it was pretty clear, and for many of us, we don't really want to hear it, but at this point he's in power. So the choice, I kind of relate it to the situation I'm in with my friend. I can't really do much about her situation. All I can do at this point is send love and have faith that this is part of what we need to experience to catapult us to the next level. And if my role right now is solely sort of reserved for simply sending as much love to this man as possible, then to be able to get past what my ego is telling me and to remind myself of my connection to being, that in the deepest level, I am just love, and so is he. We're just playing these two roles right now that are very conflicting to my current state of awareness and my current beliefs. But that's the challenge. That's the biggest challenge. And that, I think, is what personally I'm being asked to face, is to see if I can actually really do that wholeheartedly without lying to myself and creating a wobble.
Yeah, you have to accept that you don't like it and just...
And still send that. Love. Mm-hmm. Just still send it, because it is going to make an impact.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And life really is what we call it, much more than what's happening. It's what we call it. We're planting those seeds, right? And for me, it's anything that I need to do in terms of getting down to that deeper perspective, as you said so beautifully, that we are love. We, each of us, are that. And I don't have to even have, you know, I write in my book about taking a challenge to go 30 days without an opinion. This might be a great moment to do that, because it's not about what we believe. It's not about our opinions or our thoughts. It's about the beingness, you know, and when we allow those thoughts to just simply come and go. And, you know, we have thousands of thoughts a day. The issue for most of us is we think we're supposed to do something with them, right? And if we can just allow them to come and then just keep focusing on that deeper truth, keep focusing on that beingness, that love that we are, that's how, A, we have personal freedom, but that's also what impacts the planet in such a powerful way, because when we're against something, it grows.
Absolutely. Yeah, and like they were saying, and this is just a grander version of it, is that if we keep tunnel vision on the fact that this shouldn't be this way, this is going to cause this is going to cause that, it should be this way, it should be that way, we might not experience and recognize what it's actually potential, what the potential of creation is, even within our own selves.
Well, and that sort of comes back to one of the other things that they talked about, sort of coming back to me now, is about getting so focused. You know, we get so focused on this is the path and this is how I'm going to get there, and I'm going from A to B, B to C, well, why not go A to C to F to D to, you know, like keeping our minds open to opportunity. And when you're when you're in a situation, which we are now, where we're seeing that this is the person that's going to be in power, sometimes it's really difficult to be able to think there's opportunity in this. And life to me, especially living an awakened spiritual conscious life, is a continual practice. It's a continual practice. Sometimes they're, you know, very small practices, you know, life is a little bit easier. Certain situations are a little bit easier than others. And then there's the big ones. And by not being so hard on ourselves, when we do feel angry, when we do feel frustrated, when we do express ourselves that way, coming back to, I guess it just keeps coming back to that idea of love. It's, you know, it seems so simple and overused, but it really is the truth of the matter.
Absolutely. And when we feel it, rather than think about it and know it, but when we feel it, it's really very powerful and transforming. But we're out of time for today, guys. And thank you so much for being here with us, TJ.
Thank you. What a delight. I've really enjoyed our time together.
Yes, too, TJ. Thank you so much. It's been an amazing conversation. But thanks again, TJ, and to all our listeners for being here with us. Tune in 2 weeks from today as we'll have with us another amazing guest, Tamara Richardson. For those of you who would like to learn more about Stephanie and Solomon, please go to our website at stephanie-banks.com. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel at solomonlive.com. And thanks again, everyone, and have a fantastic week.